parents are not coming around. A lot of these kids are starting to get into gangs, into trouble, things like that. And they bought this 49-acre farm. So they was taking inner city kids out to this farm just for the summer so they wouldn't get in trouble. Well, we built a business around that, and we got some contracts with the state of Illinois to now start working with kids that have had failed adoptions or they were in the juvenile correctional centers, things like that. What happened was the state started saying, hey, you know what? We see what you're doing with these kids. And they were like, hey, you know what? You guys have this property. Why don't you let us bring some of our kids out there and try and do a rehabilitation program?
This is Eat, Sleep, Invest, the marketing podcast for real estate investors to get more deals. Hey, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Eat, Sleep, and Invest. I'm your host, Brian Driscoll, and I'm here with Marcus Maloney. What's going on, Marcus?
Hey, Brian. Thank you, man. Thanks for having me here on the Eat, Sleep, and Invest podcast. How are you?
Thanks for coming on, man. Phoenix, representing Phoenix, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'd say representing Phoenix, but more so the Midwest. And the roles are kind of reversed because I'm used to doing a podcast. I'm used to being the host, right? So you gotta pull me back sometimes if I talk a little bit too much, all right?
I like it. I'd rather have you talking more because I want to know what you do. You know what I mean? Everyone okay. Already knows what I do.
Great, great. So, man, just kind of getting started. You know what? I kind of grew up in the investment arena. My grandfather, he from down south, and he moved up north to the Chicago area. Well, just outside of Chicago. And I learned how to invest by flipping pigs. Right, Brian? That sounds crazy. Like, what do you mean flipping pigs? People flip houses, they flip cars, everything like that. But when we were out of school during break, what we had to do was we had to go, because we grew up on a 49-acre farm, we had to go.
Oh, you're talking legit pigs, huh?
Yeah, I'm talking legit piglets, right?
Okay.
So we grew up on a 49-acre farm, and what we would do is in the summer or early in the spring, we would buy a piglet. You can buy these piglets at the auction, $10, $15 per piglet. And then over the summer, and before fall, we would have to fatten that piglet up, take it back to the auction. And that's how we get our school clothes. So we started by flipping pigs. So it was like me and my brother and my cousins, we would go to the auction. We would buy two or three pigs. That's like $45. By the time we took them back to the auction, naturally, you could feed pigs anything. They'll eat anything and they'll gain weight. So it was by the weight. And by the time we took them back, each pig was like $200. So we took our $15 and flipped that $15 into $200. So I learned the system of buying low, selling high. So that was my foray and my introduction into investing. And how I got into real estate investing was, back in the late 80s, my mom was working with the state of Illinois, and she knew somebody that worked for USDA, and they had a couple of raggedy properties that they didn't know what to do with, and she decided to buy those properties. And then for me and my brother at the time, we were like 15, 16 years old. We had to work with the crews, right, to, you know, do the demo, everything like that. We didn't know what we were doing. We didn't even know why she was buying these properties. But at the end of the day, she flipped one, sold it, made like $35,000 fee on that one. And then the other one, we still hold in our rental portfolio to this day. So that was my kind of foray into real estate investing and into investing in general.
I like it. That's interesting too, because everyone's like, oh, you got to get into real estate and this and that. Like I got into stuff flipping silver coins. Like,
see, there you
silver.
Go.
And we used to go to the flea market and buy stuff. It's like, you can almost flip any. You just got to know what you're doing and figure it out. You know what I mean?
You got to buy it low and sell it high, right? And you got to make sure you have a marketplace for it. That's it.
Yeah. And I know a guy that flips fishing poles.
Wow.
It's like, I guess there's a market for fishing poles. If you know the industry, you know what's there. And you're like, okay, I can buy that and flip it. I thought you were talking about flipping pigs, like buying a house pig with lipstick on it or something. You know what I mean? Like making
it
pretty.
Actual animals.
Yeah. So I respect that. So that's good. Okay. So you got into, you learn how to flip just in general, like the method. And then you went towards real estate because real estate's got more money and it's easier.
Exactly. It was much more easier. And when I came out to Phoenix, and I know we're going to talk about this later on in the show, but when I moved out to Phoenix, I came out here. This was right after the recession. It was like 2010. So houses were still pretty cheap. You could still get them for a little bit of nothing, but I didn't have any money. So what immediately I kicked in was just learning how to wholesale, right? And I just cut my teeth and clawed and learned how to wholesale. And then I took that money and then just really started investing into properties back east. and built up that rental portfolio. So I didn't know what I was doing, Brian. I mean, because when I moved, I was promised a job out here in Phoenix. And what happened was I moved my family, you know, 1,500 miles away, 2,000 miles away, and then that job was rescinded. So I didn't want to tuck tail and go back to Illinois and continue working with the family, although I was still, you know, doing some freelancing with the family. So I just had, I had to pick it up and I had to learn the best way I could in order to get into real estate, because that's what I really wanted to do. And didn't know what I was doing, did some direct mail marketing and got a property under contract on the west side of Phoenix for $175,000. And the after repair value was $175,000. So I didn't, I sent it out to this small buyers list I had. People were like, dude, what are you doing? You don't know what you're doing. And I didn't, you know, but what happened was somebody pulled me to the side and was like, hey, I see your hustle. I see your grit. If I show you what to do, you know, will you work with me and we can lock up quite a few deals? And that's basically what we did. And I was off and running from there.
I love it too. You got to get punched in the face. Like you always buy this. You're like, okay, that didn't work, but you learn in that experience. And you're like, okay, I just don't want to do that again. But 80% of it was good.
Yeah. Yeah. You know what? And what it did was it taught me, first of all, I found my mentor, right? I didn't go around and say, hey, can you be my mentor? Can you be my mentor? It was basically, let me get out there, try and figure this thing out. I didn't have $100,000 or $30,000 to be in a mastermind at the time. So it was like, I had to figure it out. And just by going through trial and error, figured it out, found that mentor. And then, you know, it was like the next year we did like 60 deals together, you know, and then we just kept going from there.
Yeah. And mentors, I hear a lot of people have a lot of success there because it's like, it kind of skips over. If you can surround yourself with positive people that already have experience, and that's the thing. Like, there's a lot of people that are like, hey, we're going to partner up and we're going to get into real estate. No one has experience. It's like, might not succeed. But for people, if you're just getting into the business, find someone else that's got skills where you don't and has that experience, because you can save 5 years of mistakes that way. Maybe
absolutely.
More.
Absolutely. And what I learned in that short period of time, because I worked with him for about two and a half years, what I learned in that short period of time, because I saw other people that started when I started and they were calling me, hey man, I'm still trying to get my first deal. And I'm like, all right, I didn't do like 200 of these things now. So it's just that power and just having that mentor around is so evident. I speak highly of it.
I'm with you. I agree there. And doing it. Like, a lot of people want to get into the business. They're like, oh yeah, I got to keep learning. It's like, get out there and fail a little bit and you'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the best teacher, right? Is when you talking to that seller or you talking to someone and you make a promise that you can sell this house or buy this house and you can't. How do you have that conversation and let them know, oops, hey, I'm not able to close. You know, those are the best ways. Books can't teach you that.
So you're wholesaling houses. When did you figure out the Burr method?
So I would go back and forth to Illinois quite a bit, right? Because I was buying rentals back there. And I had a small community bank that I would always go in and I would talk to, because that's where all of my financing came from. And I would just go in and I would talk to them. I'd say, hey, you know what? You got any dead assets on the books that you guys are looking to get rid of? And again, this was a small community bank, so they held all of their notes during the bank. So they knew what was distressed, what wasn't performing, and everything like that, and sent me an address. I went and took a look at one, and this is just happened to be in town, and made an offer on it. It was at the time, I can't remember the numbers right offhand, but I think they were trying to sell it for like $30,000+. I offered them like 10, and at the end of the day, we settled at like 7,500. So got this property, 7,500. I knew the rents were like 1,200 bucks a month. The property needed about $25,000 worth of work. They financed the work and financed the property, got everything done, got a rented tenant in it, leased up. Then I went back to that same bank and I was like, hey, you know what? That asset that, you know, that you loaned me for about $32,000, you know what? I have a tenant that's paying $1,300 in this property now. And they was like, well, we can refinance that. Refinance it. Got more money to do another project. And me and that bank just started doing more and more projects. And I was like, wow, this is sweet. Didn't even know it was called the Burr method or anything like that. I was just like, hell, you know what? I can get into these properties with really no money out of pocket and then have a tenant on the back end that's paying me monthly income, passive income for the rest of the time that I own the property? Sure, let's do it. Let's continue to do this all day. And that's what we did, you know, until, you know, things turned in the market.
Yeah, I like the Burr method a lot, too. I'm with you there. It's like you're getting free houses. One thing you said there, though, which I don't think a lot of people realize, having relationships with banks is huge. I don't know if you've seen that also. I mean, obviously, you got the deal from it, but you worked with them together. Like, how did that play out, building a relationship with them?
You know what? It's key. You know what? Because I still work with that community bank right now. I actually just closed a loan with them not too long ago. And it's just having that relationship. I understand, you know, the big banks, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, everything like that have a lot of money. But these smaller community banks, they not only have the money, but they have the relationships in the communities. And by having those relationships, and as long as you perform and do what you say you're going to do, they don't mind loaning you money, period. Now, only thing I do, I pick up the phone and I say, hey, you know what? I'm looking at this property. Here's the address. I need about, you know, $150,000 in order to get the property up and profitable. And they say, okay, send me over your updated either W-2s or your updated performa.
PFS, and,
yeah,
financial stuff.
Yeah, and we'll get it done. And that's basically it. You know, no additional credit check, no running you through the ringer or anything like that, because they know that at the end of the day, I'm taking an asset that they didn't want or an asset that was non-performing and making it performing. So even if they had to take the property back, it's in a better position than it was when I acquired it.
Yeah. And I'm with you there too, because it does make it really easy. I'm the same way. Like if I have a relationship with a bank, I just call them up like, hey, I got a property and they already know that I pay my bills, that I buy shitty houses and then fix them. So the property values go up a ton. So there's really low risk for them. So once they keep seeing that, it's a no brainer. It's really easy versus you could go into different banks all the time. It's like, or the big banks, like the big banks make you jump through all these hoops.
All the
it's
hoops,
like getting a residential mortgage. It's nuts.
Yeah, and they don't know you. You know, when you had those smaller community banks, they know you, they can touch you, they can feel you, you know, you shake hands and everything like that. By having those relationships, it's so much easier to get deals done, you know, versus going to these different hard money lenders and things like that. So I try and use them exclusively as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm with you. Big tip there for everybody listening. All right, so you get into the Burr method. Then you took another step, right? Like you started getting bigger properties.
Yeah. So a few things that we did, me and my family, we started getting into the shared living spaces, like co-ops, things of that nature. Because we have a nonprofit back in Illinois, also, we saw a need, and this goes back to the history when I was talking about my grandfather. He bought that 49-acre farm because he lived in the inner city and he wanted to see, he was a baseball coach. And he was coaching these kids and he started noticing, hey, you know what? Parents are not coming around. A lot of these kids are starting to get into gangs, into trouble, things like that. And they bought this 49-acre farm. So they was taking inner city kids out to this farm just for the summer so they wouldn't get in trouble. Well, we built a business around that and we got some contracts with the state of Illinois to now start working with kids that have had failed adoptions or they were in a juvenile correctional centers, things like that. Nothing for no major crimes, but, you know, hey, they may have stole a car or something like that, you know, not killing or shooting or anything like that. And what happened was the state started saying, hey, you know what? We see what you're doing with these kids. Cause we, again, built relationships with judges, attorneys, clinicians, therapists, and things like that. And they were like, hey, you know what? You guys have this property. Why don't you, you know, let us bring some of our kids out there and try and do a rehabilitation program to reduce their recidivism rate, them going back to jail, things like that. And we started doing that. And the state was like, you know what? We can really build a model around this. And from that 49-acre farm, we would have, like right now, we have about 12 kids at that site. And then we bought other properties and just mimicked and reduplicated what we already did. So now we have contracts with the state to do shared housing for youth with failed adoptions that's in foster care and things like that. So now I go out, still do the same thing, look for distressed properties, right? Renovate them. And now instead of just doing them as a traditional rental, now we do it as shared living and we get, you know, 4x times what we would get with a traditional rental.
That's solid. And you know what too? Like once you get into something like that, which hey, kudos to you too. That's pretty remarkable there.
Thank you.
But like once you get into something like that too, you virtually have no competition. Single families, everybody wants them. You branch into something like that, you're taking a property that's meant for something else and changing it to what you need it for. There's not that many people competing in that space.
We're keeping the same use, but we're maximizing the value of that property, right? So think of Airbnb, but probably like 10x Airbnb, because they pay, the state pays by the bed. So even if the bed is not full, we still get a check for that bed being available for their clients and for their kids. Now, is there overhead? Yes, because we have the nonprofit. So we do have, you know, clinicians, things like that to come in and work with the kids. So there's a whole nother other aspect to it. But just on a real estate side, for me, is to provide that housing. And now when I run our numbers, we can look at properties where other people will say, you know what, those numbers just don't work for me. It don't fit. For us, it's like, this is a home run deal. This is a sweet deal, because what somebody would normally get, you know, $1,400 a month for, we're getting $8,000 a month for.
Yep.
So we could be more aggressive, you know, in our acquisitions.
I like it. Now, for everyone listening, like, I'm in the marketing space and there's so many different ways to market. How do you find your deals? Like, what do you find the most effective strategy on what you're doing?
Man, you know what, Brian, it's really through relationships. So we built relationships with a lot of realtors, again, community banks. So if they have any assets that they're trying to get rid of, and then we still do some of the grassroots things like cold calling and direct mail also to find some of these off-market deals.
I'm hearing that a lot lately too, relationships. Like relationships with agents, things like that. I'm hearing a lot, especially in this market too.
That's the goal right there. And that's the key, is in this market, right? Especially being here in Phoenix and in Chicago doing deals in multiple markets. You know, a lot of people say, hey, you know, you're like the fourth person that I talked to today that wanted to buy my house. You know, I got 20 other direct mail letter pieces. You know, I was receiving 30 text messages, but it's those relationships from, I'll give you an example. I had a lady give me reached out to me the other day, knew one of our employees, and they knew what I do. And she was like, hey, you know what? I got this house and I went through a divorce and me and husband split, and the house that we had that I was awarded, you know, in a divorce was this old rental that they were trying to redo. Well, naturally went through a divorce. She couldn't redo it. And she was like, hey, you know what? Do you know anybody that'll buy this house as is? And then they immediately picked up the phone and called me because I had a relationship with the person that they knew. So it's all about having those relationships. So social media is a good place. Like you said, digital marketing is a good way to get yourself out there, but it's those grassroots, going to meetups, going to RIA meetings, things like that, to where people really get a chance to know who you are. And one thing that I tell people is sing your own praises. Let everybody know exactly what you do. You know, as you could tell, Brian, I talk a lot, you know, even when I'm in a grocery store, you know, I'm talking about what I'm doing, things like that. And people are like, wow, you know what? That's interesting. That's neat. Hey, here's my number. If you need any help with anything, give me a call. And I got so many deals just by doing that.
Yeah. And meetups. Yeah, you're right. There's, because every city's got meetups. Every yep. city's got a bunch of agents where agents get together. So they're not hard to find.
Yeah, and the only thing you got to do is go to meetup.com or go to the different face groups. There's RIAs all over the country. I mean, I'm with one of the largest RIAs, well, the largest RIA in the country as RIA. Shout out to and kudos to Mike Del Preet, the executive director. But yeah, it's just being in the room, and deals happen right there in the room. The other night, it was like, who in here got deals? And somebody raised their hand. It was a local wholesaler. And then just happened to be a guy in the room that was looking to close on 15 properties a month. And he was like, well, what do you got? And they struck up a deal right there and was able to get it done. And we said, see, there was no marketing costs with that. You know what? There was no cold calling, direct mail or anything like that. It's just being in the room where other investors are. So to your listeners, you know, they're doing the right thing by listening to you, Brian, being on the podcast, being in the rooms where you are, because that's where deals happen.
Yeah. More times you show up, the luckier you get.
That's it. That's it. As simple as that.
Got to be there to get the opportunity, you know?
Yep.
One of the last questions for you. So when dealing and transitioning over to the youth group homes, right? What is the biggest mistake that you experienced that maybe somebody else could avoid?
One of the biggest mistakes, I think, is trying to go too fast, too quickly. Just trying to go too big, too fast, because there's a lot of nuances, right? There's versus traditional real estate, it's really just the asset and the numbers. But with this, you're dealing with lives. You're dealing with the lives of these kids and the real estate and the asset. So we were trying to build everything too fast and took our eyes off the ball of, hey, we're sculpting and cultivating lives here at the same time, because a lot of these kids are 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. They're still very impressionable. And a lot of times they're looking at the people that's working directly with them as, you know, hey, this is the rule book. This is how I be a man. This is how I be a young woman. And if you portray the wrong thing, then you'll lose that trust very, very quick. So what I tell people is, in real estate, period, you know what? Just have your goals, have your metrics, and take it slow. It's not a race. You know, as a real estate investor, I think 95% of the real estate investors, the whole reason why they get into real estate is for the passive income, right? Yes, the flipping and the wholesaling and all of that is sexy, but at the end of the day, you want to be able to sit on your butt and know the checks are coming in, right? So you do that by building a business and not just getting out there, you know, doing transactions.
I like it, man. I like it. What's your favorite book?
Man, The Alchemist. By Paulo Coelho. It's about, if you haven't read it, it's a great book, but it's about going through the journey of life, knowing what you're trying to accomplish. And they put it in the story form. He was trying to find, you know, some gold and some jewels and everything like that. But it was so much adversity he had to go over and go through in order to get there. So it's just about letting your inner self lead you and guide you into your ultimate journey.
Hey, Marcus, thanks for coming on. So there's a couple things here. Number one, if anyone wants to help you in a nonprofit, how do they do that?
Sure. They can always reach out to me. They can go to my website, MarcusEMaloney.com. That's Marcus E for equity, Maloney.com. I do have like a 15-minute free consultation. So if somebody want to chat and talk with me about how we did it or how they can help, they could definitely go there.
That's good stuff. Is that the best way for anyone to reach out, just in general also?
Yeah, that's probably the best way. Or they can email me, mmaloney, mmaloney, at equityri.com.
Good stuff, man. Hey, well, thanks a lot. We appreciate you coming on.
All right. Thank you so much, Brian. I really appreciate it being here as a guest on the Eat, Sleep, and Invest podcast.
Oh, hey, one other thing. What's your podcast? Like, how can they check that out?
Sure. They can go to the We Love Equity Real Estate Show. That's the We Love Equity Real Estate Show. And we have tons of guests, from the first person get closing their first deal all the way to the person that has 1,000 units that's doing syndication. So we have a little something for everyone.
Nice. Hey, well, thanks for coming on, man. We appreciate you. And hey, everyone, thanks for listening. Till next time, get out there, crush it, close some deals. We'll see you guys.
See you. Thank you, Brian.
Thanks, man.